gold is still pushing ahead today, and Bitcoin, but oil lost a bit of ground, perhaps on peace talk hopes from Gaza, but that does seem a little bit optimistic, doesn't it? Australia's housing finance continues to grow despite house prices, or because of, perhaps, and despite rates staying higher for longer. No one wants to miss out. The NAB Business Survey is out today, and the Small Business Survey from the United States, but all a bit quiet compared to tomorrow when US CPI numbers are released, but still, always worth a listen. It's Wednesday, it's the 9th of April, 2024. It's the morning call from NAB. Good morning. Well, US stocks were ever so slightly up for most of the session, right up to the close, but the Dow finished just in the red, so did the S&P. The Nasdaq only just in the green. We are talking less than 0.1% above or below at close. Energy not doing very well. Real estate is good. European equities, however, were very strong, a 0.6% rise in the Euro Stoxx 50, 0.8% for the DAX, and 0.4% for the FTSE 100 at close. Bond yields are pushing higher, 2 basis points added to 10-year treasuries, which are now at 4.42%, 4 basis points added to 10-year bunds. Aussie 10 years rose 10 basis points yesterday to 4.19%, which is where they are now on futures. A 0.2% fall in the US dollar, with the euro up 0.2%. The pound is up 0.1%, but the Aussie up 0.4%, nudging over 66 US cents. Oil has slipped back a little bit. WTI is down 0.5%, a 0.8% drop in Brent, but it's still over 90 a barrel. And gold is still rising another 0.5% on COMEX gold. It got up over 2372 in this session. Bitcoin up over 70,000 as well, close to a new all-time high. They are expected to be splitting it or halving the shares, which theoretically shouldn't make any difference, but logic and Bitcoin, you know, they're not always great bedfellows, are they? It's Ray Attrill from NAB in Sydney today, so maybe we should start on those bond yields. 10-year treasuries, they got up to almost 4.47%, the highest for the year so far. They've been gliding north all through the year. So where do they stop? Of course, they nudged 5% in October. We're still a way off that. So, but, you know, plenty of room to move in that case.
Well, good morning, Phil. Yeah, well, you're talking to the wrong person, obviously, if you want to know exactly where they're going. So wind forward to your next interview with Ken and Ken or Sky. But you're right, 4.42 I've got at the moment for 10s, which is the highest level, I think, since the 24th of November last year. So it's sort of onwards and upwards, and we're seeing...
Well, 4.47 they got to earlier on.
Absolutely.
So they've come back.
And allied to that, obviously, we're seeing, you know, further weakening, if you like, in expectations for, you know, both the Fed commencing an easing program as early as June, and, you know, it's now sort of no better than 50-50 in terms of, you know, yes, 2 rate cuts between now and the end of the year are fully priced in, but it's more like 50-50 as far as whether we'll get a third. So, and I think it is this sort of creeping, you know, doubts about Fed easing, obviously allied to the incoming US economic data, which isn't really making, you know, a compelling case at this stage, at least, for the Fed doing anything. Interestingly, I saw Austin Goolsbee from the Chicago Fed was on the radio overnight. He is saying, look, there is a question about waiting too long and then seeing the unemployment rate starting to rise. But he did say that last week's job report was quite strong, adding that the US economy is in a normal boom time. So, you know, I think therein sort of lies the explanation for that. But, you know, for me, the interesting thing is that, you know, being the currency guy, if that's what you want to call me, is that we aren't seeing higher US bond yields being associated with a stronger US dollar. In fact, quite the opposite. So there's some interesting
and then the outsized performance of the Aussie dollar as well. What's going on there?
Absolutely. Well, you talked a little bit about it with Rodrigo yesterday, that you know, although US rates are rising and the market is, you know, scaling back its Fed expectations, then, you know, and regular listeners or readers of our research will know that we've put an enormous amount of store on the volatility in US interest rates as the key driver of the dollar. But we're having to, you know, seriously rethink that thesis at the moment because of this, you know, weak dollar weakness associated with higher US yields. And as you say, the Aussie's leading the charge. But look at, you know, you mentioned that Rodrigo mentioned industrial metals yesterday. The LMEX index is up another 0.8%. That's a composite index of industrial metals that excludes iron ore, it's up 13.6% from its mid-February year-to-date lows. We've actually got iron ore prices up 3% on the Dalian Futures Exchange, and I think that the Singapore Exchange is up another 1%, and we're back comfortably over $100 at the moment, $105. So, you know, I think this is part of this sort of building narrative that the rest of the world isn't looking nearly as bad as it was at the beginning of the year. And, you know, although the US still looks great, if I look at something like service sector PMIs, and obviously we had the full suite of those last week, the US is actually second last. The Eurozone is at the bottom of the pile, but if you look at the UK, look at China, you know, look elsewhere, basically, they're all doing relatively better. So this idea that we're seeing a little bit of a relative growth shift in favour of the rest of the world, and that there is a little bit of a global reflation trade underway that is showing up in commodity prices, where the strength seems to be very much demand-led rather than a product of supply disruptions, I think is telling the same story. So I think that's why currencies are generally doing better. And the final thing I would note is that if you look at market positioning, so if you look at speculative positioning, and we get a weekly read from the Chicago futures market on that, we've got a market that's showing almost record levels of long US dollar positions, short Aussie dollar positions, and that the market is no longer particularly long of the euro dollar exchange rate, which is the world's most actively traded currency. So I think there's that view that, you know, if you want to buy into the US exceptionalism view of the world, then I'm sorry, everybody else got there before you, and it's become a pretty tired trade. Mm. So lots of things going on, but so as ever, we can sort of, you know, we can make a logical story. Whether it has legs or not remains to be seen, but that's how things are looking just at the moment.
It sounds convincing.
Yeah.
All right, and then look, and oil, I mean, we talk about it being, you know, being hit by geopolitics, and I guess the fact that we've seen Israel withdrawing some troops from the south of Gaza, and then we've seen oil prices start to fall a little bit, and the fact that peace talks are underway. So there's obviously some hope of that, you know, going to create some results. Maybe that's why oil is down, but it seems both sides have actually said that they don't think it's going to amount to much. So maybe this will be a short-term move. And then gold's still rising. You know, central banks still buying up, and speculation as well going on. Who knows how long that's going to go on for. But let's look at what's happening in Australia. Yesterday, we saw a rebound in housing finance in February with the numbers out yesterday, and an upward revision to the January number as well. So finance commitments in February were 13.3% higher than a year before. For investor lending, 21.5% higher. So, I mean, some people have money, clearly, and they're not at all worried about interest rates. They just don't want to miss out.
But well, it would seem so, wouldn't it? Well, I think you can't get away from the sort of underlying, you know, fundamentals in terms of supply and demand, basically, where you've still got extreme tightness in rental markets and strong housing demand, of which, you know, we've talked ad nauseum about the impact of immigration there in terms of the rate of housing formation relative to the, you know, the rate of which new houses are being built. So I still think that's the underlying message. But in general, we'd say that, yes, home loan values had been trending higher through much of 2023, recovering their sort of post-pandemic correction lower. And it has really sort of stalled out over the past 6 months. So, you know, talking to Taylor and Tappas yesterday, they're sort of saying that, you know, broadly speaking, lending values for both investors and owner-occupiers are now tracking broadly sideways. But it's pretty clear that, you know, the current level of mortgage rates is not proving that much of a hurdle, including for first home buyers, basically. And average loan sizes, you know, are creeping higher alongside higher home values, at least. But the overall number of new loans is proving to be pretty resilient.
Yeah. And I'd love to see, because it's interesting how, you know, first time buyers are still, you know, rising, still increasing their commitments. I'd love to know what the average age is now, whether that is also increasing. Like years ago, was it 23 years and now it's 46? You know, it would be interesting to see what age first home buyers are these days.
No, absolutely. But, you know, amid rising rents, it's just, you know, people who are, you know, in rental housing and then seeing that, you know, the landlord's dropping a letter through the door with a 10% rent increase, it certainly provides, you know, every incentive to see whether you can, you know, commute that ever-rising weekly rental payment into a mortgage.
Now, if we want to see a Japanese bounce back, it looks like we're going to have to wait a little bit longer, because the real earnings that we saw in February weren't enough to push up real incomes, just 1.8% in absolute terms year on year. This obviously is not what the Bank of Japan wants to see just yet, or investors want to see, because obviously we want to see a bit of a retail recovery if wages can climb enough. But not yet, it seems.
The one thing I'd say there, I think these are numbers for February. Now, remember that we've just had this Rengo annual wage round, which actually, I think the third round concluded last week, and it landed, I think it was at 6.3 something or 6.25. These numbers are for February, remember, so they largely predate what's going to happen in the year that's just commenced. And you mentioned the 1.8% headline, but there's a couple of sort of sub-indices, which are a bit of a mouthful, but they have a labor cash earnings same sample base pay number that we know that the Bank of Japan pays more attention to. They also have one for scheduled full-time pay on a same sample basis, and that actually lifted from 2% to 2.1, and that sample base pay number has been oscillating around 2%. So although the headline number looked a little bit disappointing, I wouldn't read anything into that whatsoever, and I think, you know, we'll start to see those numbers creep up as these new pay settlements that have been agreed, you know, start to show up in pay packets.
And how important is machine tool orders going to be today then? Because, I mean, if we see that is, you know, if they're tooling up for manufacturing, then that either means more domestic consumption or more exports. In either case, good news.
Yes, possibly. I mean, we also had that EcoWatchers survey. I know you mentioned it yesterday, it's coming out, and it was a fair bit weaker than expected. The current reading actually dropped back below 50 to 49.8. And the outlook was also weaker than the January reading, the February reading. But there have been some issues in the auto sector in particular. So if you remember, Toyota has had a little bit of a scandal akin to the older listeners may remember the VW scandal of several years ago, where, you know, a lot of the testing on emissions were proved to have been falsified. And there's something not dissimilar that apparently has emerged at Toyota. So it has had an impact effectively on production, I think, perhaps sentiment there. So again, probably a little premature to read too much into that. And it's whether or not those orders numbers today will share any impact of that, I really couldn't say. But at the moment, I think it's just making the activity numbers a little bit difficult to interpret.
And German industrial production numbers are out, were out much better than expected. So presumably that's going to help exports, which fell more than expected in February. Imports rose 3.2%. So the balance of trade was actually a bit worse. But industrial production was strong.
Yeah, it was a lot stronger than expected, wasn't it? 2.1 on the month against 0.5%. Expected, you know, put that in perspective, we're still down 4.9% year on year, but that's up from 5.5% down the month before. Remember, we have had a pretty mild winter in, across Europe, but in continental Europe in particular, and that has boosted construction output. And we had a similar phenomenon in the first quarter of last year, where we had a mild winter. And obviously 2023, we were up in Q1 and down for the rest of the year. So we shouldn't get too excited about this, but we did have that manufacturing PMI revised up to just above 50 when it came out last week. So, you know, there are some signs here that, you know, the Eurozone economy, and particularly the, you know, the dragging anchor that has been Germany for much of the last 12 months, you know, things are, you know, say it's relative, things are certainly getting less negative. Whether we're yet in sort of outright positive territory as far as Germany is concerned, I think remains to be seen. But this sort of evidence of a nascent Eurozone recovery, and obviously the China numbers have been better than expected. So going back to the beginning, talking about commodity price strength and the beginnings maybe of a reflation trade, you know, everything at the moment is sort of fitting together on that front.
The NAB Business Survey today and the Westpac Consumer Confidence Survey as well. Last time the NAB survey showed conditions were rising, but confidence falling. But,
no, that's right. Obviously, nothing much to say here, because people might think that I've seen the survey, which I haven't. But we were a little bit above average, weren't we, on that conditions reading. So a little bit of a contrast in the survey, at least, between conditions and confidence. And on consumer confidence, at least, we did have a small fall last month. And there was an interesting split between consumers surveyed before the RBA's decision at the beginning of February and those afterwards. and the view that I think had been running that, you know, cuts in interest rates maybe as early as mid-year were likely, those took a bit of a hit after the narrative surrounding the RBA meeting. And we did see those surveyed after the RBA meeting considerably less optimistic or more pessimistic than before. So let's see what their survey shows this morning.
Doesn't take a genius to work out there's less confidence if you know your mortgage is going to stay higher for longer.
Absolutely.
The quarterly survey of business opinions in New Zealand as well today. The US has got the NFIB Small Business Survey. Rodrigo was talking that up as quite a good indicator this time around on how the real economy is holding up or otherwise in the United States. Do you place that much credence on it?
I do, in the sense that small businesses are responsible. I was just checking the number. They employ, I think, 46.9% of private sector employment in the US is from small businesses. But in terms of the importance of today's numbers, it's worth noting that one of the key numbers that does feed into many people's non-farm payrolls forecasts is the hiring intentions read. And that actually comes out a couple of days before the overall survey that we'll get tonight. So it came out last Thursday night, I think, and it was a fall to 11%, which is actually, you've got to go back to the pandemic to find a number as low as that. And the literal read through is that we should expect non-farm payrolls to be dramatically weaker in the next couple of months than they have been in the first quarter of this year. So if that survey is a reliable indicator, it's telling us that the labour market might not look nearly as strong as we go through Q2.
And has it historically been the case that it's been a reliable
historically
indicator?
Historically, it's been very reliable. So, whether or not things have changed, industry is becoming more concentrated with bigger firms and they're a bigger share. Can't discuss that this morning, certainly. But as I say, there certainly is flashing some warning signs not to expect perhaps a repetition of the non-farm payroll strength that we've seen in the first quarter of this year.
Right, we've got to go. But we do have the ECB latest bank lending survey ahead of the ECB, of course, later on this week. And tomorrow when we talk, we'll be talking all about US CPI, because that is tomorrow as well. So the week is hotting up, but we'll leave it there for now. Good to talk, Ray.
Thanks, Phil.
And that's it. That's the morning call for this Tuesday morning. I'm Phil Dobby for NAB. Back again tomorrow. See you then.